accession number 19656, Reel 2.
Captain Hammond, Reel 2. Do you mean violent incidents?
Oh no.
What incidents did you have in mind then?
Well, there was one. It was interesting to me. The doctor came to me and said, second office, he said, in pigeon, of course, ever seen baby born? I said, no. Said, you come with me. And he took me out, and there was a Chinese woman going to have a baby. And he stuck her in the bath, you know, one of the, actually in the bath, and the child was born in the bath. That was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. That was one incident. It was only an incident anyway. And there was another one on the way back from Singapore at one period. A passenger jumped overboard. Well, we had to launch a boat and pick him up. Although the crew were so mad at having to do that, I think they nearly pushed him back in again. Those things, there was life happening all the time with 1,000 people on board, as you can well imagine. You realise that the ships were grilled off, and we carried armed guards all the time for on sort of anti-piracy sort of precautions. And that was another thing. I mean, going back to the first, when I first joined the New Chuang, the anti-piracy precautions were, you were given a Winchester repeater rifle, which was stuck on on your, in clips on above your bunk, and a revolver with 50 rounds of ammunition, and a cutlass. And that was your sort of personal defence weapons in case the ship was pirated. Because it was a common thing to pirate a ship, as you well know.
Did you ever run into pirates yourself?
No, never.
Where did the pirates operate from?
They came aboard as passengers. Deck passengers, in the main.
So they had to be frisked for weapons?
Well, it's all, anything is possible in China. I mean, you loaded 500 sort of souls aboard in Canton. You don't know what they've got in there. I mean, you can't sort of... there's always collusion, I think, between probably the Tongku police or whatever.
Tongku?
The Tongku police. That's the North Chinese police. Hong Kong, of course, but they were mostly from North China. The anti-piracy guards. And it was a sort of life.
Did you feel safe doing this job?
Didn't think about it. But if one... If one kept to the regulations, i.e. at the beginning of the watch, personally, with your own sort of armament, and the policeman opened the gate, let the watch sort of through into the grill zone. That was it. I mean, you had to keep to the regulation to whatever. And leaving Hong Kong too, every 2 hours, one had to report back to Hong Kong by radio. But your charts were gridded, so latitude, longitude, AO, whatever and whatever. But you put your latitude and longitude, but you should never, if you put an O in the middle of your grid, it means that you're in trouble. That was part of the anti-piracy scheme. I was there. I wasn't on board the ship at the time when the Shantung was pirated. And that was quite a nasty one, really. The pirates took the ship, with the collusion of the police, I think. And apparently the second mate was on the bridge with the captain. No, he wasn't. He was, this pirate sort of burst into his cabin and pulled him out and took him to the bridge and the captain was up there too, and that's how it went on for a while. Briefly, chief engineer had hidden himself somewhere along the line, and all the other officers had been captured like the second mate was, and put into the captain's cabin, which was below the bridge. Well, apparently it was misty, very misty, and the captain apparently lifted up his glasses and looked towards the land. I said, there's Chilang Point, which is Bias Bay, and the number one pirate was up there with him, and another one, I think. Anyway, the pirate looked over and couldn't see anything. He grabbed the glasses from the captain and looked, couldn't see anything. But previous to that, this young third engineer had been singing in the captain's cabin below, and he was twanging an old mandolin he'd got. This is a true story, actually. And he was singing John Brown's Body, saying, "I got a revolver in the pocket of my coat," sort of thing, you know. So they knew that one chap below the skylight was armed. So anyway, while the pirate was looking for Chilang Point, the second mate hit him on the head with a deep sea lead, knocked him out completely. And the old captain grabbed the revolver, shot at the other number two pirate on the wing of the bridge, who ran away down, and they opened the skylights and pulled the other three or four people up. So they held the bridge. Well, the next thing that happened, apparently, was they found the old chief engineer and they pushed him along the deck, you know, somebody shot from the bridge and hit him on the shoulder, and he was left bleeding down there. But apparently the next thing that happened was the ship, of course, had stopped, and the old carpenter was on the forecastle, and ship swung head to wind, and oh no, they set the ship on fire from aft, and the carpenter dropped the anchor, and as he was told to, and ship swung head to wind, and of course the flames went up. Pirates took to the boat and rowed madly for the shore, whereupon a British destroyer came up, and everything was all right after that.
Was there much variation between the various ports that you went to?
Oh, yeah. Well, an ordinary run, say for ships, a cargo passenger ship, like one I was on for quite a long time, the Ocho, which I love that ship, was Canton, start with, well, Hong Kong anyway, start then Canton, back to Hong Kong, Swatow, Amoy, Fu Chau, then on to Qingdao, Shefu, and Weihai Wei, and on to Tintin. And Tintin was a place and a half, believe you me.
In my way.
Well, you went up a river, a long way up a river, and it was a lovely, lovely sort of port. And it was very European in a way. And there was so much going on there. There was the White Russians were there, and there was the Germans there, Italians there, and they played Hayalei at the Forum, and there was a lot of social life there.
Played what at the Forum?
Hmm?
Played what at the Forum?
Hayalei, you know that game, Peloto, you know.
Peloto, yes.
Yeah, they used to play that there, and the Basque crowd were there. And I used to enjoy that place.
Did you ever come across the Japanese?
Yes.
Pre-war?
Yes, I did.
In what way?
My first encounter was in South China, in a port called Pakhoi. What ship was I on then? Shantung, I think it was.
What happened at Pakhoi?
We were about 2 miles, and we were anchored. We had passengers on board. We were anchored at about 2 miles off the port. And the cargo used to come out in lighters. And, of course, the war was on, of course, between Japan and China at the time. And about 5 or 6 aircraft came over. Just as the junks were pulling out to come out to us. And the first junk, I think, came on and on and on, and they dropped bombs around him and left center and ahead and machine gun him, and I could see bullets go through the sail and just over our heads, you know. Anyway, he managed to make alongside us, and it was quite a feat. But that was their way of stopping trade, I think. In fact, at that time, I wrote a letter to my sister in England. I've still got a copy of it. And Swires published it in one of their magazines quite a few months ago, because it was interesting, you know. There was that, and of course the incident in Tintin as well. The Japanese were more or less, the war was really going on then, and the Tintin incident was quite different, because we left Tintin with people running away, you know, a lot of refugees full, the cargo, the decks were full of people. Anyway, at those days, we had compradors, which they were the clerks and the cargo people, and they lived below, whatever. Anyway, number two comprador came to me, our second mate. He said, second office, I've got young Chinese girl, won't she hide? Anyway, he said, no, can't stay downside with these people, because I think she was somebody. And anyway, I said, I'll bring her through the grill doors and we'll see what we can find. Midships somewhere. But I had to go and watch. I said, stick in my sort of cabin for the time being. And anyway, we went down the river and it was getting dark. We got to Taku, which is the bar, and it's dark. And all of a sudden, were illuminated by searchlights. A Japanese warship. Stop. So we stopped. And we were boarded. And we were searched. And she was the one they were after. They found her. I think she was the wife of the Chinese general, or one of his ladies, anyway. And funnily enough, the head of the search lab with the Japanese was a white Russian. And don't know who he was, but I think a couple of voyages later, he came on board the Yo Chow in charge of the anti-piracy guard. Anyway, I saw him and I recognized him. And told the captain sent me ashore, me and superintendent, and he was off. You would have thrown him overboard if he'd carried on. I don't know who he was. Now, this is a mystery that I would honestly like to find out, but I never will, I suppose.
So he'd been working for the Japanese?
Yeah, either, or who was he? And who was the Chinese woman?
But that incident where the Japanese warship stopped you was when the Europeans were driven out of Jensen, you mean?
No, not Europeans then. No, this is it was shortly after the,
You were saying when that was, which year was that?
Must have been 1937, 1938.
And what was happening in Jensen at that time?
In Tintin?
Yes.
Well, the Japanese were invading. They're invading. And there's a real war going on.
Any other were you doing this job when the European war broke out?
Pardon?
Were you doing this job in China when the European war broke out?
Yes, I was indeed.
Have you got any other memories of pre-war service with the China Navigation Company?
Well, those were the two main incidents, I suppose. They were really, I suppose, yes. Oh! I was in the big 1937 typhoon that went over straight over Hong Kong. About God knows how many ships were ashore that night. We finished up with three anchors down, going steaming full ahead, and just holding our own. We were all right.
Were you surprised when war was declared in Europe?
Not really, because I suppose a year before the war was declared, the Navy, and Channel Nav in particular, were getting very friendly, and we were cooperating in lots of ways. I had a very good liaison with the lower staff, which was a sloop out there. A chap, he was quite famous afterwards. John Cairns was a sub-lieutenant. He finished up with Amethyst, you know. And he was a great friend of mine. And we used to sort of... His ship was very often in Taku when we were there, and he used to dine on board, and I was invited on board the lower staff, and that's how I became very, very Navy conscious.
Have you any memories of Cairns?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What kind of a chap was he?
Oh, John Cairns. Typical Dartmouth polite, liked his pink gin, very good companion, and I think a very good sailor.
So how did the war affect you at first?
Well, I was so Navy conscious at that time that as soon as war was declared, I hired myself hence to the consulate in Shanghai and saw the naval attaché there and said, I want to join the Navy. I volunteered. They always said, hang on a bit. And he came back to me afterwards and said, you're to go down to Singapore. He said, your commission will be there when you get there. Which meant, of course, that I had to resign from China Nav and get a passage down to Singapore, which I did.
What happened there?
As soon as I got to Singapore, I reported, and the captain in charge at the Singapore Naval Base, and said, your commission hadn't arrived. I said, oh dear. He said, but it's on its way, and he said, you better just do what you want to do, you know. So I joined the Red Funnel line as a temporary measure, as chief officer, and I did a few trips around the islands. And then, of course, I was informed that my commission had arrived, and I was to join the Tenedos. Which I did, I think, in August of 1940.
With what kind of job?
Navigator. Being a master mariner.
What was the Tenedos like?
She was a flotilla leader for the Singapore Local Defence Flotilla.
A destroyer?
Destroyer, yes. S-class. First World War.
What were conditions like aboard that ship?
Well, a typical Navy. The commander was John O'Brien Milner Barry, was a very, very fine chap. The first lieutenant was John Dowson, an Australian. Then, of course, I mean, I came sort of next, I suppose, as the navigator, and there was a sub-lieutenant, and a warrant officer, and a warrant engineer. And of course, the crew were British, not all. There were one or two Chinese sort of messmen, but the crew were pre-war sort of, they hadn't been diluted. Three badge ABs, goodness knows what. They were typical sort of Navy types. So I joined the Navy, never having fired a gun in my life, or seen a gun fired, no sort of knowledge of proceedings, except that I was a good navigator, I know that, and a good seaman, I suppose. But I learned very rapidly the Navy ways.
Were Navy ways much different from merchant seaman ways?
Not really. I mean, they say they are, but the from tramship days, yes, but not from China Nav days.
Was navigation much different in the Navy?
Oh, well, no, not really. No, no. So it was the same. You had a sextant. Merchant Navy people have a sextant. Naval officers have a sextant. Same sextant.
What kind of duties was the ship carrying out at first?
Varied, but in the main, we were JB Patrol. Dull, uninteresting.
JB?
JB Patrol. Going across the straits to Sumatra, back again.
So what does JB stand for?
Well, that was just the name, JB. That was the name, JB Patrol. From Singapore, we used to leave Singapore Naval Base, and we were out for 5 days, backward and forth, 6 miles there, 6 miles back, intercepting, in, you know, ships and whatever. And then we were relieved by the I think it was Stronghold then, who did the same thing, and that you went on week after week after week after week, very boring. But then you'd get an interesting job. On the 21st of September, we took the captain of the Dane, Captain Eccles, to the centenary celebrations, can you call it, of Raja Brooke, the famous White Raja. So we went there as the naval sort of representative. He was the naval representative. Of course, we mounted the guard of honour for the White Raja and his lady to sit on their thrones and receive all the tributes from the Dayaks or whatever. And of course we came sort of back. But that was a very interesting little trip, which was a diversion anyway. And then